Lori and Julia here on this sunny Thursday afternoon on MyTalk 107.1 Everything Entertainment. Streaming live at MyTalk1071.com. Check us out on the MyTalk app. And speaking of the app, it's your last chance to register for April prizes and listener rewards. You can still enter to win a visit to Weeping Willows Acres or that Micro One Room Makeover. You could also get gift cards to Caribou Coffee, Bachman's, Aveda, and more. So go to MyTalk1071.com to get registered so that you can get lewd for listening. All sorts of prizes. Let's get going.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, you guys, it's so bad. The comments. Lucille Ball has been trending all day.
Why? Why are people so mean?
Julia, because people, it just makes them mad all over again at the idea that Nicole Kidman is playing Lucille Ball. And one, the facial flexibility is what the number one thing that people have against Nicole Kidman playing Lucy, who has one of the most famous expressive faces in all of Hollywood.
It'd be like me. I'm trying to emote expression right now.
Right.
Not a lot happens.
But it's so, like, so much that just 4 hours ago, Lucille Ball Jr., Lucy and Desi's daughter, has taken to Instagram to just say she is going to be great, blah, 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 blah. But people are just, like, tweeting Lucille Ball's terrible bronze statue in her hometown that is notoriously, it's considered one of worst statues.
Yes. Isn't that in upstate New York or something?
Yes, I think so.
I remember reading about
and
that.
Deborah Messing in the last season of Will and Grace last year, they did a whole I Love Lucy. It's uncanny how much she looks like her. And she's really getting, people are like, have you seen Lucille Ball?
Oh, wow.
And I mean, Deborah Messing, you can't, she does the Vitamega Vigabin Mitch, whatever that thing was. She is literally the spitting image of Lucy in I Love Lucy.
Wow.
I mean, you, like, when you look at it, you're like, you, which one is it?
Oh.
And they're like, oh, this looks like Taylor Swift in red curls. This, I mean, people are, so all day long. So Lucille Ball Sr. has taken to
leave her alone
to tell us.
Leave her alone.
Okay, Willie Nelson, happy birthday. Michelle Pfeiffer, it's her birthday today. And
happy birthday.
Willie is 88. Michelle Pfeiffer is 63.
He wants, yeah.
Love
and
Willie.
And for our friend PVS, you know who you
are.
Oh,
yeah, our friend
happy
Peggy
birthday.
Van Sickle. It's her birthday
Van
today,
Sickle,
too.
Happy birthday.
Okay, Tom Clancy's, we've talked a little bit about how Tom Clancy's got a new movie. It's going to, right now, two movies. Michael B. Jordan is coming up to play, and it's his first action thriller. It's called Without Remorse, and it is going to be on Amazon tomorrow. And he really, I guess I would say this is his first action thriller. He's not done this. He's playing, you know, this CIA hero,
Tom
Clancy. I don't know which exact character is this, but it's a two-picture deal. And, of course, he's probably hoping for a movie franchise if this is a success.
Absolutely.
So
why not?
Let's listen to from People's Sexiest Man Alive, Michael B. Jordan.
One of the hardest working names in Hollywood and with no plans of slowing down. Michael B. Jordan, starring in his first action thriller, Tom Clancy's Without Remorse.
I'm going to make it right.
Lots of explosives and artillery. How did you prepare for this role, and how is John Kelly different than other roles you've played?
We had to train specifically for it. Now, John Kelly, you know, he, you know, suffered great loss of being able to, you know, take that pain and that hurt and unleash it on anyone and anything that, you know, comes his way was an interesting role to play.
And one of those scenes, you're doing an interrogation basically inside of a burning car. What was it like shooting that scene?
Very, very hot. Like, you would think, okay, cool, I'm like 15 feet away from the flames, I'm fine. And you slowly feel like your eyebrows and eyelashes starting to singe and curl up because the heat is so intense.
It's always these CIA guys, they always are suffering from a loss, you know,
they're always
their
broken.
Family's been killed, you know, they're whatever.
Yes.
There's always something. So anyway,
I think he is so sexy.
I love him. Just love him.
I think he is something.
He really is. And when you look at everything that he's done.
He's been in everything.
Well, and they showed a cute clip. I think it was at the Academy Awards. He and Amanda Seyfried were both on All My Children the same year.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
Michael B. Jordan was on that show for like a year. And Amanda playing the daughter of somebody.
Folks were such a good spot for people to start out. I know.
All right, just here's one more little thing from Michael B. Jordan.
Jordan breaking onto the scene as a teen, his first recurring role on the HBO hit The Wire.
I appreciate all the roles that you've played, but whenever I see you, I still think of Wallace.
Damn, Wallace.
That's a huge compliment, you know, like 20 years later, and it's still, you know, people are still impacted, and they still see Lil Wallace. It lets me know I haven't changed the way I look too much, so that's good.
Right.
Now, no stranger to playing tough guys like Black Panther's Killmonger.
Chief John Kelly and Killmonger, both former U.S. Navy SEALs. Could you see how Without Remorse could kind of be like an origin story or prequel to Killmonger's story?
We served the country that didn't love us back because we believed in what it could be. We fought for what America could be.
I could see something like that. That would make sense.
That was very sweet of Michael B. Jordan to say that, Absolutely. Wasn't it? Because it's like, that question. Yeah. I'm like going, what?
That is a weird question.
Yeah, it really was. And it's interesting that he, you know, The Wire, that's why he left All My Children, just did the 1 year because he went to The Wire. Oh.
That is one.
He's really never stopped working.
No, I believe it.
Since All My Children, he was like 15. And now he's like, sexy. And he's hot. Do we have one more, Ollie? Okay.
Yeah, we do.
World continues to mourn the loss of Chadwick Boseman. Jordan continues to be inspired by his late friend.
And seeing his performance in Ma Rainey's, in hindsight, looking at it, so emotional. You're looking at the last performance that he gave, you know, and that says a lot. And I think, you know, Oscar, no Oscar, you know, I think he won, you know, I think he, you know, the way he inspires people in the way he inspired us, you know, around the world, you know, is something that has changed me for the rest of my life.
The Black Panther franchise moving forward with a sequel slated for release next summer. But Jordan tight-lipped on whether Killmonger will make a second appearance.
All right, there
Depends
we go.
Depends on how well this Without Remorse does, because he might be filming another Tom Clancy. Could be doing this. I mean, he's really probably booked up for the next 5 years.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good. You know what I'm wanting to come back is, what was the one with John Krasinski on Amazon? Why haven't we seen that one?
Jack Ryan,
yeah.
Because we watched it, that was out last summer.
So was that already just then?
Yeah,
God, it feels like it was years ago.
No, it was just last summer.
Amazon's been slow.
Well, but people, remember, we're going to hit a lull for some stuff because there was no filming.
Yeah, the COVID. But I'm just thinking, Amazon really feels behind to me in compared to what. I don't know. Is that just me?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I agree with you, Julia. Yeah. I haven't used Amazon Prime to watch a hot show.
I haven't.
In a long time.
Mm-hmm. Nope. I even peeked at it last night to see if there were any surprises. Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Oh, I see. You mean as far as new content.
Yeah. And we loved that Kate Beckinsale thing, you know, when she was that person trying to find her missing husband.
Yeah.
That was one and done. I mean, they did some great stuff, but it's like they don't have any new content.
Slow moving, yeah.
Apparently, they've been focused on keeping the world fed last year or something.
Shipping all those baskets or boxes everywhere. Well, I've got a little update on, you know, our boyfriend, Taylor Kitsch.
Oh, gosh. Where is he? And why doesn't he call?
Well, let's keep this Canadian.
He's 40,
going.
Lori.
I know it. He is, Taylor Kitsch is in a movie for Amazon called The Terminal List.
Okay.
And I think Chris Pratt is in it too. They both are in it. And he's got kind of long hair and a beard in it. And
kind of looks Waco-like.
Here's what it is. In The Terminalist, Chris Pratt plays a Navy SEAL whose platoon gets ambushed, and he starts to think he's being set up. Taylor is his best friend, a former SEAL who's now in the CIA Special Forces, and tries to help Chris figure out what went wrong and why. In real life, Navy SEALs have to keep their hair short and their facial hair to a minimum, which is why Chris Pratt looks real clean and whatever.
Right,
and
right.
Anyway, so Taylor is out of it. And so Amazon is obviously doing some stuff with this type of storytelling because that's being filmed in Canada right now. And Taylor's last role was in a series called Shadow Play, released last year. And back in October, he told The Hollywood Reporter he wants to do more indie projects, and maybe that's why he's kept a lower profile, as he's just more selective. All he directed a movie called Pieces that he's trying to get financing. So maybe taking something opposite Chris Pratt in an Amazon thing is a way to get that made. You know, get some of the passion projects made. But he looks real cute at lunch yesterday in his Canada hat.
He's cute.
Yeah, he really
is. He's so cute. He's so sexy.
Roman Polanski is going to make a new movie for an Italian film company.
Somebody's still giving him money.
Yes, it's an Italian film company. The same. It's called The Palace, and it's an ensemble cast set in a Swiss hotel.
Who's going to...
It's like a Woody Allen movie.
It does.
The movie, no, it will be shot in France, but it'll supposed to be in Switzerland. It's being funded by this Italian company. His wife will be in it. And we've never seen an officer and a spy because no American distributor would do it. And that movie starred Jean Dujardin.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. From The Artist.
Yeah, so Polanski, you know, I mean, he does make good movies. And maybe Mia Farrow will be in this movie. Remember she flew? How ironic she flew. Like 15 years ago to London to defend him.
Isn't
it kind of ironic with everything with her daughter?
Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, he's 87 now, and that movie's called The Palace, and maybe it'll be full of French actors. Like,
well, we wish him well.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. We'll be right back with the Dirt Alert.
This is a My Talk Dirt Alert.
Long time no see.
I know, right?
Yes.
It's been a hot second, but we got to talk about a Scientology story that was just published in the Hollywood Reporter.
Tell us.
And this is all about Scientology's production work in Hollywood and the insidious way that they recruit actors into their organization.
Okay, talk.
So, Scientology has some big production facilities, if you're not aware. And one of those facilities is right on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, in the neighborhood of Los Feliz. They purchased a public television site for $45 million back in 2011.
That was huge news at the time because people were upset that they had the most money to buy it because it's such a great state-of-the-art
facility
that a lot of other people had access to.
Yeah, like a lot of actual production companies wanted to have access to that. Yeah. So they bought that for $45 million. And this is in addition to all of the other presence that Scientology has in just that neighborhood alone. Mm-hmm. They have another place down on Sunset Boulevard. There's a Celebrity Center that's on Franklin Avenue in Los Angeles that's fairly close. But you're right, Lori. That place has 20 editing suites and 21 special effects stations, control rooms, music studios, mixing rooms. It's a whole studio.
Basically, Tom Cruise paid for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so. And this is separate than the church's Gold Base headquarters, where they have Golden Era Productions out in Hemet.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Where is Shelley? Yeah. So they're talking about in this Hollywood Reporter story how production of film and television has been intertwined with Scientology from the very beginning. L. Ron Hubbard, he wrote a bunch of Hollywood scripts, you know, and that was his thing, telling stories.
And I feel like Leah Remini told us that she did like so-called acting classes, like teaching people how we're going to help you get a SAG card and doing this. But it was just a blatant thing to try and get people to sign up for Scientology and start paying for courses.
Well, you're exactly right. So in this story, Leah Remini goes into a little bit of detail about some of these workshops, acting seminars, where the church would regularly hold these at that Celebrity Center facility.
And that was part of her duties.
Yeah, and it was a recruiting tool. So it would be technique classes, personal branding lessons. You get to meet and greet with Scientology industry professionals. And Leah Remini said about teaching the seminar that she actually put together a course and she genuinely wanted to teach young people about acting.
But Lee Remini says that she was pushed by Scientology officials to refocus on selling Scientology services and courses.
That's right.
Yeah. So she says doing acting seminars was to sell books and to sell Scientology services. And it wasn't for the purpose of helping actors. Mm-mm. She says that phrases like, quote, raw meat and bodies in the shop were used intentionally as a way to describe potential recruits. She also said that Scientology reps would be in the room during these classes and intervene to talk with attendees, so giving them basic tests and pushing entry-level courses on them. And ads for these seminars would run in magazines, online, and would promise that Scientology would bring Hollywood success.
And then are they making Scientology movies and recruitment things at this place? Probably. And mm-hmm. they're probably going and advertising and back casting or whatever that right. back lot or whatever the trade thing is, saying that they're filming stuff, and then they get there and it's an actor from not LA and they're like, what's a Scientology? I mean, I'm sure that they recruit, like, that they're hiring actors real productions.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because Lori, you mentioned they listed stuff in a trade called backstage.
Backstage, that's what I'm saying, back lot.
Well, you know, yeah, same thing essentially. But backstage is a casting website where you can get there are websites in Hollywood mm-hmm. where you can get legitimate jobs.
Right.
And that's one of them. And they would be deliberately obtuse in their listing that these things were being filmed in the Scientology production lots.
So like the Scientology movie, because go into one of those centers and they're showing you all kinds of videos. And
you can go in the one right downtown St. Paul.
Don't go in there.
No. There's no bodies. There's mm-hmm. just videos playing
in the old science museum. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, then they're like trying to cast people. But I think, I don't know. I feel like somebody in Scientology fought and got that they had to pay them guild wages.
Yeah.
Well, here's one of the things that's really insidious about Scientology looking for recruits mm-hmm. in the world of acting auditions is that Scientology representatives would hang outside of Central Casting. That's an actual place. It's not just like a term that we throw around. It's like, well, they just came from Central Casting.
It is an actual place.
It is an actual place.
I never knew that. Yeah, I always just thought we're going to go to Central Casting.
I never knew. I thought it was all over town, wherever the audition was.
Right. You thought that it was like a metaphor for Hollywood. Right. No, right. Central Casting is an actual place.
Okay.
It's in Burbank. And you can go there, and that's how you can get looped into being an extra for various projects. And you can get access to jobs, and it's just kind
of... On your way to a SAG card, that might be your first stop.
Okay.
Exactly. And Scientology knew that, though. Uh-huh. So they would be hanging out, targeting actors who are lined up to be extras, and promising them jobs... and helping them securing their SAG cards.
And of course, they're not at all.
Right. And, you know, the SAG card, it's a Screen Actors Guild card. It is the union in Hollywood for actors. And that opens the door. Having that SAG card just completely opens the door for you in Hollywood because a lot of movies are union jobs. And you can't work on the movie unless you're part of the union.
And then it guarantees your wage, and there's health insurance, and there's, you know, like it's a union like any other good union is meant to be, protect the worker.
Right. And so there's an actress, she's not telling her name,
yeah,
but she's telling the Hollywood Reporter that she was in line in late 2018, and she saw Scientology members coming up to actors and telling them, skip the line. Come join us. We'll get you working right away.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Now, Central Casting reps would come outside to warn the actors that the Scientology people weren't affiliated with Central Casting and that they were like, you know, please ignore them. But if you're new, you know, kind of fresh and bushy-tailed to, like, get a job.
I'm glad the Hollywood Reporter is doing this story because they've known about it and they could have written about it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is an issue that needs to be talked about.
Yeah.
Well, right, to warn people, young people who are starting out.
And they could have written this story, you know, quite a while ago.
Oh, of course.
I mean, they've been kind of...
I feel like they're getting more ballsy.
Maybe.
Writing about Scientology, don't you?
For sure, they have. You know,
and they were talking about, one of the things in this Hollywood Reporter thing is that, you know, you mentioned Scientology having these videos and things with huge production values. Well, you know, they cut corners by hiring Sea Org individuals who are in the Church of Scientology working for like
nothing,
pennies on the dollars
to
make this stuff actually happen. So they're not
not using these actors that they're saying because they don't want to pay anybody.
No,
should you have a SAG card, but they don't want to let you know, oh, these we only pay $100 a week.
Right.
For 60 hours of work.
Right.
Right. Right. So, which is illegal and unethical and so many other things. So, you know, it's really this Hollywood Reporter article really worth the read and just some of the really insidious things that Scientology has done to try to recruit new members into their organization.
Calling out Scott Rudin, the bully, and now Scientology, the bully, and taking advantage. Because think about how many newbies, fresh people come into Hollywood, make their way. They have no idea. I'm sure they don't say the casting call is at the Celebrity Center. I'm sure they disguise it with the street address.
Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, let us not forget it's that time of the week.
And your theory is?
As opposed to that time of the month.
That's right.
That's in a couple weeks.
That's right. Okay.
Good to know, Ollie.
Here's a theory for you.
Okay.
Just, you know.
Oh, dear. She's making it up. Okay,
no,
when she pauses
it
like this, trying to figure out how to say.
Companies like Apple, Spotify, and YouTube, the theory is to mine your data, what they think they know about you, what they do know about you. My theory is they don't need much. And guess what happens? Tel Aviv University, I'm reading something for the study of I'm reading the terribly boring journal Telematics and Informatics, and I come across this story.
Terribly boring journal. I don't even understand the title.
I know it. It's exactly. See why it's not my favorite? But it takes just 3 songs to ID someone. From their YouTube, their Apple, or their Spotify list.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, that's all.
3 songs.
That's
what
all they need.
To do a profile on you.
That's all they need to ID somebody.
Okay, so let's just think of your 3 that I always hear.
Mm-hmm.
A punk rock one.
Mm-hmm.
What are your 3? An Elvis. Yeah. And then you have a...
And either like a, you know, a kind of an R&B song. So either Silk Sonic or Pink Sweats.
Okay, this is what we're in
love
with.
Cry to Me. You know, I always have a good R&B in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I do. I like a punky, I like an 80s, and then I like an R&B.
I like a sappy, I like an R&B, and I like a sappy.
Emo, go back to the emo.
I'll take any little emo. Uh-huh. Carpenter. How about you, Holly?
Well, okay, so lately I think that it would be classic rock, hip hop, and probably some dance music.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
All right, you're in a party scene.
Yeah.
She's partying.
And some days we do the, like, I start with Robin dancing on my own or Machine Gun Kelly, My Bloody Valentine. But we do. And
we have the sweet spot that we always go back to.
And then your YouTube knows what songs then to play them. You know, then you'll get some more. But anyway, they're just saying that.
It's 3 songs.
That's all they need in the digital world to learn a whole lot about you is just 3.
That's crazy.
Can I tell you, I got really irritated about something to profile me. All right. So there's a streaming service that offers you free content, and I wanted to watch something.
Okay.
When I opened up the app, it asked for my birthday.
Oh,
and I'm like, I don't want to give you my dumb birthday.
Yeah.
So I was born yesterday. I literally put in the day before.
You did.
And now I'm locked in the kids mode.
Oh no!
The algorithm has locked me into the children's cartoon.
So funny.
And it's like, you cannot base people's taste on age. That is rude.
Right. Or just 3 songs.
Or 3 songs.
You know, but
that is so funny that you're locked into the kids zone.
I can't get out.
Yeah. No, that's funny.
I can't get out.
They figured they've registered their new baby because maybe some people do that.
Oh,
I mean, famous people register their kids'
names,
Twitter and Insta.
Right.
They book up everything.
That just makes me laugh. Yeah.
I'm not that fancy, and I don't want to watch Baby Shark.
Right.
Oh, no. Oh, Holly. Yeah,
so there is something to that theory, then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Here's a study, and I would like, we need to change this. Half of Americans still don't believe it's a valid excuse to miss a day of work. And what am I talking about? A mental health day. I think that is very acceptable.
Well, we've never, have you ever just called and said, I can't go to work today. I'm feeling off my game without having a physical attribute to go with it?
You know what I have always done? If I need a mental health day coming up, I tell my boss, I need a mental health day tomorrow.
We've worked here for 19 years.
Huh?
We've worked here almost 19 years. Have you ever said that to someone here?
I did this at Carlson.
Well, again, that was 19 years ago, Lori.
The thing is, I don't know why you're arguing with me, because people should feel comfortable with a mental health day.
But you're saying we should, but I'm just saying we have never done that in this job.
Okay, bosses then could, and I, this is what I did as a boss. I let my employees, no, Julia, I had a reservations department and I gave everybody their birthday off, state fair day, and a Christmas shopping day. And I said, and if you need a mental health day, just tell me the day before.
Right.
People, bosses, people in charge could say to people, if this is a stressful job, if you ever need to just.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah. I don't know.
It'd be great. I'm just saying we haven't practiced this, you and I.
And 62% believe that they would be judged if they told their bosses that for a mental health reason. They don't think it's a good enough reason.
I'm not surprised by this. I think it should change.
I would like it to change.
I'm not surprised. I think it would work better to say, I don't feel well. Well, I mean, that's what people do.
That's what I'm just saying. Yeah. But if you made mental health part of the workplace culture, that would be like a good
thing. You know how you do that? 4-day work weeks. Just implement them straight across the board. Holly, that's our platform.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that.
A 4-day work week, I think the mental health of people would be brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I think
it would be. But coming back, coming back to work and everything, this could be a thing that companies could just look at and maybe change so that there wouldn't be so much judgment, because there are some jobs that are really super stressful, or people are having times in their life. And here's the deal. If you need a mental health day, maybe you're acing a counselor and then you're just going to be too upset to come back to work. Maybe you just need a mental health day. Mm-hmm. You can enjoy it so much more if you don't have to fake call in sick.
Well, this is true.
You have more enjoyment.
This would be true, because if someone sees you out and about shopping at Target on your mental health day, you don't have to cough.
Yeah, you don't have to feel bad about it.
You don't have to duck and run.
Yeah. You know,
I agree 100%.
Right. Yeah,
I agree 100%, Lori. But
that.
I mean, I would have to hide. You can't even enjoy
unless you're out of town. Like the one time I called in
you
sick
did
from spring break training.
She did.
For the Mariners.
No, but you called me from Arizona.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She called me into Carlson.
And luckily that desert air gives me a real scratchy voice. And I called into my own secretary.
She did.
And I'm like, Linda, I'm sick, but I'm not really sick. But tell Brian.
I worked with you then.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. And then I just prayed I would make my
flight.
And
then I think
home.
A lot of people, you know, if you had young children who get sick, you would feel like you can't take it because you're saving your days when your kids are sick.
Yeah.
And right now, like my neighbor's a school teacher, and now the kids, someone had COVID in the class. So now all the parents who went back to work now have to figure out daycare for the next 2 weeks. You know what I mean? It's just.
Because people usually get like maybe 6, 7, 8.
That's trying on people.
Sick days.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you don't use those, but if you could use them for mental health, I mean, it would be, people would be more productive, more happy. I would just like to see a more compassionate workplace, Julia.
All right. Okay. And I want a 4-day work week.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to work on these.
Yeah. Julia, that one is, you're trying to get that for yourself. Luckily, you have a lot of vacation days and you could just make that happen.
I am.
Yeah.
But that is something I think that we've talked about, though. They're doing studies on it.
It is a true theory.
It is.
That is, but
Unfortunately, we're not there yet.
We're not in a Scandinavian country. Let's just take it baby steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. Mm-hmm. We'll get there. Now, millennial parents say 2020 has made them rethink how they raise their kids because they feel they have become more compassionate parents as a result of pandemic parenting, that it's changed them for the better.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot more time with your kids. People have connected in different ways.
More bonding. Maybe more, people learned they were really terrible teachers and
they were really terrible parents before, and they spent too much time at work and worrying about work and not enough focus on their kids. I think everybody's rethinking things after this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. Four out of five parents say 2020 is making them completely reevaluate how they parent. I'm going to say 2020 has made us completely evaluate our relationships, completely reevaluate our work.
Everyone's taken a look at everything, but I also think parents are so thrilled to have their kids back in school and back in normal life again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, have some normalcy in the structure.
Yeah, and they are hoping to stick with it. 73% say that they feel like they will be a better parent.
Yeah.
Better relationship.
I don't know
partner.
How the parents did it. I think I would have been a mess.
Oh, you would have been.
I would have been a mess.
You would have been way better than you would have thought.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All your friends were in the same. Everyone was in the same boat. There is something about that were.
Misery loves company.
Different levels of it.
Right.
Everyone had different degrees, but it was a universal experience that we all got to share.
My parents, my friend group whose kids are, you know, out of college and stuff, just on their own in the mid-20s and things like that, they are all like, we would have been wrecks if we would have had smaller kids.
You say that, but
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, as a person who has lots of millennial friends who have lots of little kids, you would have done better than you thought you would. Because you just step up. You're like, this is the way things are right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is exactly it. So
go to your room and put the duct tape back on. I would have stepped up with the tape. All right, we'll be right back.
Avril, how old is that song? 15 years old?
Almost 20.
Almost 20.
Really? I like it, though.
I want to say happy anniversary to the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. I'm holding up the photo of them. He looks
everyone
like a smiling,
look up,
angry
Lori, look
bird.
Look up on the billboard. Lori's holding it up right now. Yeah.
The smiling, angry bird.
A smiling, angry bird.
That's kind of what it looks like.
Oh, my word.
Well, I'm just saying it's a great picture of her. She picked out the photo.
Well,
she's got to get her revenge in little ways, Julia. Okay.
Oh, my, how time has passed for Prince William.
Well, he looks good, I think.
He does.
I think so.
Also, Angelina Jolie, I watched her be interviewed on Entertainment Tonight. It was from yesterday's show, but I watched it this morning.
Yeah.
And she's talking about the movie Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is going to be dropping on HBO on, I believe, May 14th.
Yes.
And it does look really good. And
it does look good.
It does. Holly, you posted this trailer a while ago, but she was talking about, because she has played physical action heroes before. Tomb Raider was Lara Croft.
I think they're one and the same, but Salt was good. She's very good at action movies.
Yeah, and she's playing a firefighter, like a firefighter
Ranger.
that fights in the woods, the wildfire, so different than a city. And she said she was drawn to her character because her character has PTSD. And she said, my character taught me how to stand back up. It was a very healing movie. And it was her first movie she did after leaving Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, it takes a long time sometimes for these movies to come out. So she said, she's been very healing for me because you just get so broken and then you stand back up. Hannah is a very broken person who carries a great deal of guilt.
Oh.
So.
All right.
I'm drawn to people who've been through something and are broken and then they find their way forward and overcome it. Well, that's Unbroken.
Well, that's like so many characters in movies. Mm-hmm. That's just movies.
But I just love her.
I just love her. Brad, you're such a drunk. I just love her. Brad still has to have supervised visits.
I think he doesn't anymore. I don't think they're off of that. No, here's the thing though. I do think that they were madly in love with each other.
I think they were.
Oh yeah. Madly in love. And then you have children and then you have health things.
Yep.
And then you want someone to change and be whatever, different, right. And they don't want to.
Yep.
And then that someone punches your kid in the face on a plane in front of the family. And
then you're done.
Then you're kind of bummed out that they could never change for you, that they decided to give up drinking and smoking when you'd been nagging them for like 7 years. But see, nagging never works.
Sometimes it does. With children.
Oh, do you think so?
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. My kids do things because I nag the crap out of them.
Well, that's kids, but I'm talking about your
sometimes,
partner.
I said sometimes with children. That's all I meant. Oh. No, it doesn't help with no.
Have you ever successfully nagged a romantic partner to?
No, that's when you just.
No.
You're like, I'm done.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm done.
Not at all.
So anyway, but
the nagging does work with kids.
Yeah. I hope that she, Brad, you know, get to a good place for those kids, you know.
100%.
That's As somebody like, I mean, you know, like my dad, it's like World War 17 with my mom. Do you know how long they've been divorced? Literally. Yeah. I mean, I think so that'd be hard. Long.
My parents were great. My parents got to a place of peace because they
hated
each other at the beginning. Yeah. But they got there and it was so wonderful for all of us.
Because we could all be together.
We could all be together. Problems. And they would kind of get a joke out of it because they made us, for crying out loud. Exactly. No one's going to love your kids as much as the parents do.
I'm going to say that to my dad. Dad, you're denying me my love child status.
Well, right. And no, you know, and it's just wrong to hold a grudge this long.
People are funny and they do that though, Julia.
Yeah,
that's something
for your kids. And Ann Tressler preaches this.
Yeah.
Put your kids first.
Julia, but when your kids are older, when
doesn't
you break
matter.
Up,
you still.
But there's not as much motivation for that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, boy.
And then people get into a habit and, you know, Northern Minnesota, people in the Northland can carry grudges.
Kind of like Italy. It's around the same spot on the same latitude.
There's some grudge holding that's going on.
Passive-aggressive grudges?
Yes. Very much so. I was grateful for that. And I'm grateful for my relationship with my ex.
Oh, you know? Julia, you have you and Bill have an amazing.
We've done good. Yeah. I mean,
But you're both divorced kids.
And we are. And we share a property together that we have to get along. And we always have. And we have put the kid. We never put them in the middle.
They should make a movie about you two.
Really.
It could be a documentary. You guys are so good at it.
No,
the couple
really
shared a cabin in the woods.
No, because I can't imagine what we say to each other. Not in front of our kids. I'm just kidding. But it is. It's something I'm proud of. I have to admit.
Daniel Kaluuya when he said, "Mom, you and Dad had sex, and here I am on the Oscar stage." That was so cute.
And his mom's face.
It's something you can be proud of. Yes. I'm proud that we are amicable because it's made it easy for everybody around us.
I would say that you're friends.
Kind of friends.
That's what I feel like. Well, every time I eavesdrop on it, I say, "Oh, look at those two cute friends."
We have funny conversations.
Yeah. Because you're friends in that way that you are fond of each other. You don't hate each other.
We don't hate each other.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho.
My dad is just like, you know,
he's going to be there. I'm not going.
You must greet my mother.
Oh, come on, Zipper.
Come on, Zipper. Okay, I will. You know, just like really does not want to, but he will. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not a total heathen.
Just a
halfway.
Halfway heathen.
Hope you're not listening today, Dad.
HWH. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, Holly.
Off you go.